You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to Viv Govender from Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, both in Johannesburg. Now, Viv, I want to start with you because David and I were just chatting off air and see the S&P's down about 1.4, 1.5%. And from what I can gather from the mainstream commentary, people like CNN and CNBC, it's because the big tech stocks are spending too much on R&D or projected to on AI. Now, I don't know if this is a valid argument, or if it is a valid argument, then it presents a buying opportunity because they've got to do so. What is your assessment of the situation of the tech stocks and their results this week?
Yeah, look, here's the I would say, is the $640 billion question, you know, trillion-dollar question, how you want to call it. It is the question of whether or not AI is going to scale into the future. We don't know that for certain yet. We have people like Sam Altman coming out and saying the new models are much, much better and it's going, you know, going very well. But we don't know. We haven't seen them. Now, if it does scale, no, this is not overspending. This is pretty much what a logical person would do. We're talking about the greatest technology ever. It's like, you know, trying to say, should you save money on warships during a war? No, you need them and you need to get them, you know, and the one that has the most is going to win. The one that has the least is going to lose. And so you just got to spend. If, however, this stuff does stall, if there is some like wall that we're going to hit, that's going to mean that more computing power and more data does not mean a better outcome. Then, yeah, we're talking the biggest infrastructure spend. These companies are doing the biggest infrastructure spend in history. There's nothing that's ever been done in the next, like in a period of a year or so that like these guys are planning for the next year. By any country on anything, including building power systems, including going to the moon, including building highway systems, nothing like that. So it all depends on whether or not the technology is going to bear fruit. And at the moment, I don't know. I can just look at the tea leaves, but I don't have information saying whether or not that's true or not.
Okay. What about the actual results themselves? I'll stay with you on this one, Viv, before going to David. The actual results without the projected AI spend in the future, were there any surprises? I noticed Uber got a bit of a whack today, but that I don't call that big tech, really. What about the other ones?
Look, I mean, the results are reasonably good. I mean, they were beating expectations. They were not looking terribly bad. I mean, some of the stuff that came out, even if you look at Meta, right? For instance, look at Meta for the last 5 days. It's basically flat. One of the reasons that this stock basically is down is because it came after the Google numbers, which were really good, you know, and the Google numbers, or let me say Alphabet numbers, were really good. And therefore, the market actually push the price up. And you look at the same thing with Microsoft as well. Over the last 5 days, you know, the share price is not that badly, you know, it's falling at the moment. It is, you know, it's down, but, you know, it's after a significant rally so far over the last little while. I think these results are reasonable. They're not terrible. But the market basically, I think, like as you said, is scared by the expenditures into the future, as well as some fears about, you know, revenues coming in as well from these new technologies.
Okay. David, were you happy with the numbers? You were heavily invested in tech.
I think the numbers are brilliant. I mean, if you look at it in absolute terms, I mean, if you look at the number, the earnings, the amount of cash that they're generating, what's flowing to the bottom line, what they have and are able to spend, I think it's incredible. I think I have more faith in the people running the businesses than the chaps who are writing the reports, you know, who sit and who are not quite sure what's up. This is their industry. But what's also quite significant, Lindsay, is that if you start to look at the multiples, and I'm not a multiple person, you know, I like to buy it on the story. But, I mean, if you look at Alphabet, it's if you go 1 year forward, I think their PE ratio is down at around about 20. Mm. You know, even on the current numbers, I think it's 23. This has come from something like 36 or 35, 36. I don't know what the averages are. But I think, you know, if you go forward, even on NVIDIA, you start to look, it's coming down to 46, and we haven't seen the results yet. So you're getting into value territory regardless of what you believe is the right amount to be spending. And this is the build stage. You know, the next stage comes is monetization. And you can't build. You can't have monetization if you're not building. So I'm not I just think that we live in an industry where it's like a betting shop. You know, it's super bets, it's Hollywood bets. I just think everybody expects too much too soon, too fast and on a straight line. You know, you're never going to get an industry like this developing on a straight line. It's almost impossible that every quarter on quarter is going to be perfect and going to get what these what the analysts expect. So I just sometimes you've got to take a step backwards and say, look, these businesses. I mean, if you take away all the narratives and the descriptions and everything, and see what their earnings are. When they're increasing their earnings, you know, whether in double digits or revenues by 30-odd% or whatever, 15, 16, 20%. I mean, this is incredible. These are mammoth, mammoth businesses. So I just shrug my eye, you know, just shake my head and say, move on. Okay. Let this run. Just one word though.
Yes.
Sorry. I don't want to take away from Viv, but it's not in any respect, disagreeing with him. I think this is a lot to do with the election. I think there's such a nervousness. You know, Lindsay, if you think what we're going through, when I watch the headlines, you know, you can understand why people are just so super sensitive and so worried about what's going to transpire. It has to have some impact on sentiment. And then we've had the election. I mean, we had the budget in the UK. We've had a faltering Europe. We have a China that's not growing. You know, when you put it all up together,
yes.
No wonder sentiments is like it is. You know, you don't feel good at all about anything.
There was a very interesting, I don't know what to believe, you know, they've had 45, 50 million people already vote, I think, and someone did a survey, and it's trending on X at the moment. It's called, it's hashtag Harris Surge. And look, if somewhere that she's 63% versus 37% Trump in three quite important states. And I didn't really believe it. But there is suddenly people are saying it's not as close as you think. Now, Viv, you gave us an analysis of this a couple of weeks ago when we last spoke. Have you changed your mind at all about the closeness of the race or whoever you think might be in the White House in a couple of weeks?
I saw that poll, but that poll was people that say they've already voted and what do they do? The problem is right now that Trump voters don't really respond to these votes. The way you'd look at it is looking at some states like Nevada, for instance, right? What they do is they give you an outline as to who's voting and what party they're voting for, not who they're voting for, but like, you know, what party they're voting for, what party they're registered for, rather, not who they're voting for, but like you say, I'm a registered Republican and I'm voting, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or I'm an independent and I'm voting. Now, if you look at it from that point of view, there's a guy called Ralston and I follow him quite strongly, and he's got a great, kind of blog, and he kind of like goes over these things, and he's saying that it's looking very bad for the Democrats because the Republicans are voting in numbers that are quite high in the U.S. right now. It's not about convincing anybody; it's about getting your people to the ballot box. And if you look at the other voting things, I mean, even places like I think New Jersey, the Republicans are basically voting on par with the Democrats, and historically, the big advantage the Democrats have is getting the people to the voting station, getting people to vote. The question arises, is this huge kind of like a surge for the Republican early voting going to really cannibalize it on election day? But like you said, 50 million plus people have voted already. So this is already like, you know, going to be a huge chunk of the total voters. A couple of things. Firstly, don't believe the polls. The reason being is the polls are too narrow. Everyone 1% are tied. That's not logical given the margin of error and stuff, you know what I mean? And so it makes you believe that the polls have been adjusted by the pollsters to cover themselves, you know what I mean? So they're basically saying, oh, it's a tied race, so it's making it close, so we're in the middle of the pack. The second thing is that in terms of the polling guys, they've changed their methodology from 2016 to 2020. Okay. Just to give you guys a bit of a background. Sorry, this is the wrong question to person to ask this question because if you look at polling in 2016, 2020, dramatically undercounted Republicans. 2018, 2022 got it very right. Okay. Mm. There is a strong possibility that when Trump is on the ballot, they don't count it properly for whatever reason. The question arises then, has enough changed since then that people are not as ashamed to vote for Trump as they were in the past? And that's the kind of thing. Or are they also still giving us these lopsided things? Now, the Hadas Surge stuff, I wouldn't trust that. I would not trust some of the stuff that's saying that's, you know, massively ahead. Just because of the fact that when you look at the actual places that you have information officially from, they don't show that there's a massive surge for Harris versus Trump, unless a whole bunch of people that are registered as Republicans are suddenly voting for Harris. And that is the only way these numbers are giving a Harris surge. If the Republicans, people that are basically members of the Republican Party, registered Republicans, are voting, but they're not voting for Harris. And I don't know if that's the case here.
Okay, so we've just got to wait a week. Okay. And
Hopefully Donald
Trump driving garbage trucks around after he's got off his 757, which is quite funny. Quite clever.
That's because Biden's support is garbage.
And Biden was so stupid, they should lock him up. Thing to say.
Is Biden stupid or is Biden sabotaging Harris? That's the question. Because this is not the first time he's done something like this to Harris. Harris had a great talking point because there was a guy at the Republican convention or like event that made a joke about Puerto Ricans and used the word garbage. And Biden comes the next day and totally reverses it. From being a thing that got a huge anti-Trump thing to reversing it, Biden has called press conferences just as Kamala Harris is about to give a speech. What is that about? You know, he's not happy with her.
His nose is out of joint. Definitely. Mm. Oh, well. Mm. Right. David, only one stock I want to talk about on the JSE today, and it was a stock that you mentioned when we chatted on Monday. You said something like, I'm not really interested in the stocks like British American Tobacco or AB InBev. AB InBev's numbers were pretty awful today.
Yeah. Volumes. Mm. And I think that's a big issue. Is that if you look for one point, I think volumes are coming down. And it just shows you how difficult it is for these large companies or companies like this in beer or in that industry to make any headway. I'm not a great believer that, it's been a theme that I've had for a long time that companies like who sell beer, they might do okay, but they're never going to do brilliantly. You know, there's just too much competition. It's just too complicated around the world. They might have certain areas in which they do well, but I think this is just evident, just evidence of that. Yes, they might have premium brands doing okay, but it's an industry. Lindsay, people are drinking less. They're drinking less alcohol.
They're drinking zero beers now. I mean, the youth in the UK, for example, it's a generational change. And if you're catching up by catching the zero beer market, can't see the point myself, but if you can catch the zero beer market, then and you get it right, and it's a good brand, and it's got a reasonable taste to it, then you'll do well. But you're quite right. Alcohol consumption is not falling off a cliff, but it's certainly been reduced from the days when I first was in university or got my first job. Everyone was at it all the time.
I just think these well-known brands, they just haven't got the power that they used to have simply because of change of habits, which I think was happening but was accelerated by COVID. Also, I think, advertising, there's so many different avenues and it's so easy to advertise. You can start your own campaign using YouTube or a TikTok or a Snap or a Instagram or something. So I'm that's why I'm going for retailers rather. I say, where do they sell the beers? Walmart, Costco. Okay, that's where I'll go because that's where they buy it. But I think for today, for manufacturers, I think it's becoming really tough to get people to, especially these global brands, to get the kind of spread and support that you used to have.
Do you guys want a bit of a more wilder take on this? Okay, so you guys know about the new drugs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the Wegovys and stuff that are coming out, these GLP-1 inhibitors, right? What they do is they reduce appetite, and that is why you eat less. You don't have the same appetite you had before. But do you know that studies have been showing that if you take these drugs, right, you actually drink less, you gamble less, you eat less ice cream, you eat, you bite your fingernails less. It reduces these urges, okay? Look at Starbucks. Look at Unilever's ice cream business, which they sold. Mm. Look at anything that sells anything that's unhealthy, anything that people don't want to do. And you say, okay, how big an impact can it be having? Remember, because not everything is evenly spread. The guys like David, who are basically running marathons, are not drinking a lot. Okay. The guys that are basically partly diabetic or having insulin resistance are also more likely to be heavy drinkers, I would think. You know what I mean? Mm. That's probably one of the things that causes these problems. And if you have these guys on, like, you know, these drugs, what are you going to have is that these are the guys that are actually going to reduce their consumption because the drugs reduce your addictiveness. So I would bet in the next, say, few years, you'd see things like Starbucks, things that are in the fast food sector.
McDonald's.
The sin industries of gambling or alcohol or even tobacco are all going to see a big downturn. And the reason being is that these drugs are coming and they're going to be prescribed at like significant double-digit percentage of populations in the West.
And the price, of course, has to come down. They have to be more accessible. I mean, for example, the NHS in Britain, which is under huge pressure and has been for many, many years, I can't afford just to dole these things out like M&Ms. They're not at that point yet. But as we know, with scale and with advancements, the prices will come down. And it's a very good point that you make. I just wonder if any of the other side effects, I mean, what else does it suppress?
No, don't worry about that, Lindsay. No, look, but here's the thing. The actual cost of making Ozempic, right? How much do you think it is?
I don't know. Tell us.
As low as maybe $1 a month.
Really?
Brilliant. That is why Novo Nordisk has this huge, a stock increase. That's why Eli Lilly is doing so well. The cost of these things is like, I think at the high estimate, it's like $5 a month. Okay. But it's $1 to $5 a month is the cost of making these things. It is not a case. It's like, for instance, EpiPens. If you see EpiPens and the cost, they're like a couple thousand rands or $1,000 for EpiPen. The insulin and EpiPen you can buy for like 10 rand. Okay, it's just this markups that they're putting into place here. So yes, I do actually think that governments are going to do this because firstly, you reduce. Oh, it's not just by the way, amazingly, the chance of Alzheimer's goes down dramatically with Ozempic as well. There's evidence of that as well.
Falling.
Alzheimer's, kidney disease. It's really because most people are too fat. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's not about, if you reduce appetite, make people eat less, put everybody on a diet effectively. A lot of the problems that you have, like obesity goes away, but also Alzheimer's, also heart disease, also liver problems. Mm. You see what I mean? So, I think this is going to be one of those things like, back in the day, like the pill, for instance, not going to just be a very popular drug, but it's going to actually change how society functions.
That's very interesting, isn't it?
I'm with you. The lead article in the Economist this week is that together with a briefing, and it's not often that they would come out and highlight the value of a product like this, but they do call it. They don't call it a super drug. I'm saying it is a super drug because they identify this is real and identify exactly what you've been saying there about the benefits that it is going to bring. Oddly enough, Eli Lilly came out with their numbers and they were very good. But there's going to be hiccups along the way, getting wholesale, getting it to the market, covering the issues that you brought out, the national health system, the costs and so on, et cetera. And therefore, you must look at the long effects rather than, Eli Lilly missed, knock it 10%. So I think the trends that you spoke about, both AI and these drugs, they're there for a long time. They're going to pursue, but expect volatility. Expect this to happen. It's not, you can't, as I said earlier, it's everybody just wants this nice, smooth ride upwards. It's not going to work like that. Business doesn't operate like that.
All right, so let's move on to something a little more tedious, and that's the MTBPS. And Viv, you're very good with stats on this one. It sent me to sleep, actually, but less income, so wider deficits, all that sort of thing. There was a couple of nice points about infrastructure spend and their commitment to infrastructure, which was good. But Viv, anything that caught your eye, or were you like me, rather ambivalent?
The one thing that did catch my eye, maybe because I'm not as keen as I should have been, is like the amount, the allotment for our operations in the Congo. You know what I mean? You guys see that?
No.
Apparently, we have a little kind of a military exercise happening in the Congo by the South Africans. Hmm. And I wasn't quite aware of that. It's as good as you could expect. He's basically going towards trying to have, attracting more investment, funding all these extra little, SOEs. Also, trying to cut back on the wage bill, which in South Africa, as you know, is a South African public sector workers are some of the highest paid in the world with some of the least most protection in the world as well. So that's obviously something to be looked at. But yeah, overall, reasonably good. But I was surprised by the whole Congo thing.
Yes, I wonder what they're up to up there. Certainly not protecting the mines, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah.
Okay, dollar rand is currently 17.67. The British pound against the rand is 22.76. Euro rand, that's 19.18. Euro dollar, 108.55. British pound after its budget, 128.60. What else have we got here? Gold price, it got to 2,800 a couple of days ago. Well, very, very close to it. It's down $50 an ounce today, 2,738, nearly 2% fall. Platinum is down 1 2/3%, or $17, to 996. And palladium is down 17 as well, to 1131. S&P 500 futures, 57.63, which is now down 1 2/3%, 57.56 actually. US 10-year Treasury bond yield, 4.32%, and the South African 10-year after the MTB PS, 9.47%. So it's had a bad couple of days. As for oil, it was down 5% on Monday. It's now up 1.1%. Just above 73 now, 73.23, actually 1.5% higher. So things going on the energy markets. Bitcoin has also had a good time of it of late. That is just under 71,000. David, any stocks on the JSC that you're interested in, down or up?
You mentioned the prices of metals.
Mm.
And again, once more, we've been struggling to call the bottom of a market. Looking at it and saying, oh no, with confidence, it's turned up, it looks better, everything's looking good, this looks like the bottom, and then next day comes and we knock back again.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at some of the, some of the numbers today. Sibanye down over nearly 7% as well.
Mm.
And it's a reflection of that fall in price and, also just a bit of nervousness. Amplats, all of those down quite significantly. The other one you mentioned was AB InBev, which is down 6.4%. So another reflection of response to the to the results. Year on year, this hasn't done anything. Here's a big company, probably one of the biggest on the JSE, and yet its overall performance has been very sluggish. I'm trying to look at its overall performance this year as I talk to you. But I mean, it gives you an idea of minus year to date. -12.5%. That's AB InBev on our market. That's a JSE. So, and it's the second biggest company by market cap at 2.3 trillion rand, just under BHP.
Gosh.
So it hasn't got that weighting in the index because most of it floats offshore. But I mean, it's still big. We can deal in as many shares as we want. So if you actually look at some of the other miners while I'm talking on this,
Northam's down 7.2, Anglo Platts down 6%. We saw Impala Platinum down nearly 6% yesterday after its quarterly production report. All the platinum miners are cutting back.
Mm.
They really are. On the upside, I've got Santam up 2.25. Some real resumes. We buy cars up 1.5, etc., which is really nice. So nothing there. But David, you're going to give us the closing JSE indices and the value traded if you've got it.
Yeah. So I'll give you the value traded up to now. It's about 23 billion, which is up on the average that we've had lately. Naspers is still dominating, but there's been quite a bit of activity recently in banks. Always First Rand, Capitec, Standard Bank also up there with the value leaders together with some of the gold shares. But just going to the indices, the all share ended down 1.58%, which is quite a knock.
Mm.
It's taken us down to 85385. The top 40 also down a similar amount, 1.68 at 77327. And then losses right across the board. It's only that Santam that you mentioned, which propped up non-life insurers. So, but otherwise the miners took a hammering, led down by, you know, the platinum shares, gold shares and so on.
Okay.
So right across the board, we've had, you know, big losses, which have come with the, with sentiment in global markets.
This time next week when we chat, gentlemen, we'll probably know almost definitively who is the next president of the United States. Viv, what, I'm not asking you who you support. I'm just asking you who you think it'll be.
Personally, I don't know. The certainty, I think it's probable, but I would not put a certainty down that we would know by this time next week who the president is going to be. Right now, if you give me even money and say, who would you bet on, it'll be Trump. I think he has a slight edge. Probably most people are putting it like 55, 60 to 40, which is not, you know, dramatic, but yeah, it's probably Trump. But like I said, if you get to say, you know, this time next week guaranteed, I would say it's not a guarantee that we'll know Thursday. But yeah.
We'll have a fair idea. David, do you agree? Again, not asking you who you want, because I know who you want, but who will it be?
Yeah, no, I think it will be. I just have this uneasy feeling that he's got the edge. And you know why I say that is that when I talk to rational people, you know, when I talk to rational people here, I was talking to a client yesterday and I see how pro-Trump they are. I say we got no chance, you know, that they not turned away by his, you know, just his whole character and what he stands for, you know, that they should actually support that. I think that scares me. And I would imagine it's pretty much the same in America. You know, for whatever reason, they're not influenced by what he does. You know, they just think he's the right man for America. I cannot believe it. And Lindsay, for me to see him on the White House steps, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to live it. I don't know how I'm going to live through it.
I genuinely believe you, because it's affecting me quite badly, the fact that that man could get in there. But let's not speculate. We'll, next week we'll have a decent enough idea. But, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time, as always. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities, Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, both from Johannesburg, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.